Boom, bam, bomb. And we're live. Welcome back. Apologies for the delay. I had to take a week off, but we are here now, and we still love you, and we hope you still love us. This is episode 10 of Shit I'm Not Proud Of, and I am Charlie.
And I'm Anna.
We are here, and it's so good to be back.
New year, new you.
Are you the best you now?
I feel completely all glowed up inside.
Oh my God. Have you been to a yoga studio lately? It is a party.
Ate my kale bar, drank my smoothie.
My God, everybody's getting on the kick for health and stress relief. And one of my teachers last night said, I can't tell if everybody's here because they're 2019-ing and doing, you know, living their best selves, or if everybody's just already real fucking stressed out for the year.
Could be. Oh my God, I haven't had a day off in 2 weeks. I don't know if I'm stressed or not. I just like know that there's some sort of dimension I'm not feeling anymore.
You're just pulling yourself too thin, I guess.
It's okay.
If it's bringing you joy, it is not joy that is making us grateful, but gratitude that makes us joyful. That is plagiarism. No, I'm just kidding. I got it from the Daily Calm. It's David Rast.
Right. So today, I feel like with the beginning of 2019, it's kind of a good thing to talk about learning how to let go and walk away from some previous behaviors that didn't serve you, people, friendships, relationships, anything that you want to leave behind.
How or when to walk away. Gosh, I don't even have a framework for that when it comes to walking away. You know how we've talked about acuity a few times in the moment? Like you have sort of an instant wisdom that's different from the staircase wit that follows thereafter. I feel like I put so much an emphasis on being able to identify situations in the moment rather than having some time to reflect thereafter. It's like all of the sort of respect that I have for identifying when I'm in a problem situation or when, for instance, it's time to walk away. I guess it's like one of those things where you're just not necessarily ready to accept some truth, even if you're writing about it, even if you can see all the telltales and you go back and read your own journals and stuff like that.
Looking back, it's like, God damn it, I knew that 2 months ago.
And yet still I wasted all this time, or maybe not wasted, but whatever, spent a bunch of time cultivating readiness for whatever hard pill that I needed to swallow was.
I mean, I think it takes everybody different amounts of time. I think it's also like a bad move to be super cut and dry. I know quite a few people who are like that, and watching the way that they operate is astounding and kind of alarming to me. It's just like, dang, you can just walk away from like maybe years at a job or years with a significant other, or you can just cut a friend off just like that. Wow, like where's your loyalty?
And that's the interesting question, right? When it comes to loyalty and it comes to maybe having like a work ethic.
Yeah.
I want to build this framework where I can reconcile the differences between having good work ethics and not throwing things out that are broken just because, you know, I can buy a new one at Walmart sort of thinking.
Right.
Versus we've actually put some time into this and we owe it to ourselves. There is a sense of responsibility. This is actually something that I tried saying to my ex during our breakup. Do you have no sense of responsibility over this situation? And she interpreted that as just like, oh, it's a guilt trip, man. Fuck you, man.
Right, sure.
But on the flip side of that, I'm
that's
like, well, hold up. Like, I mean, I do actually feel maybe it is a guilt trip, but maybe it's also, you know, I put years into this thing and I don't want to throw it away or feel like it's being thrown away for not good enough reasons, right? Like, I want to agree. I want to get behind this decision to walk away.
That makes sense. In the past for me, I definitely haven't been as in tune with some of my red flags. So I would notice them and they would kind of wash over me. And then I would rationalize what had happened, maybe because I lacked the confidence to like uphold some boundaries and be like, you know what though? That actually is a deal breaker. That actually is like something worth walking away. Mm. And I feel like that's something that I've learned how to cultivate over the last couple of years is having stronger boundaries. So now when I feel pause and when I feel some resistance to just like totally cutting something off, I trust that. And so I want to take a little time and at least honor my previous investment of time. Before, I was just confused about everything. Mm-hmm. What would you say the most important cultivated skill you could possibly develop is when it comes to being good at walking away?
I don't even know if it's a skill.
Instead of wasting time.
I kind of wonder if it's more experience, right?
Yeah.
Like having the depth of understanding when you're just playing a losing hand.
Being like, oh, I've seen that before. That's never going to end well. Yeah.
When it comes to taking hindsight wisdom and looking back at situations, I have journal entries that date months before that breakup that I had mentioned happening. And I look at it now and I'm like, Jesus Christ, why didn't I just go and do the obvious thing? But in that moment, it never even occurred to me that walking away was an option. I don't know if it was necessarily the same framework that you're talking about, where it's, you know, a function of self-confidence and this sort of thing. In that situation, for me, it was more of this attitude, like the dysfunctional relationship that I had with having a work ethic around the relationship. It didn't feel like an option to quit, sort of thing.
Well, that makes sense. What a lot of us deal with is the attachment and the investment of time. And that's what makes it so hard to disconnect from something, even if it's bad for you, even if you're not growing anymore, even if trust is compromised, even if someone just isn't bringing positive support into your life. Looking at the red flags and looking back with hindsight, like, should help us. But when you're in the moment, I feel like what you're really seeing is just all that time and all that stuff you've already been through.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, how the hell are you going to start over and do that within the context of a romantic relationship? How the hell are you going to start over and do that with someone else?
Totally. That's when the confidence thing starts to show up too, I imagine.
Yeah. I guess that's like the whole bubble around what I meant when it comes to confidence. Like, God, how am I going to do this again? I don't want to do it again.
It's like two sides of the same thing, right? The exact same words that I'm using to describe this air quote work ethic is also maybe a little bit motivated by, well, what happens when you hit the downside of that situation?
Yeah.
So over New Year's last year, not just this one that happened recently, but a year ago, I kind of got stood up for the holidays. And this was, in my mind, a justifiable transgression because, you know, we came up with some reason to rationalize it. But really, at the end of the day, I wanted to spend the holidays with my partner and I didn't. And so I wrote on the 30th of December, I dreamt of compromise. Well, only when fully understanding the reasons why. I don't understand why I'm here, and I don't understand why I feel so hurt by what's transpired this holiday season. All I know is that it does hurt like hell, and I see nothing on the horizon that can convince me this won't happen again. I don't see a future where we heal from these wounds because I don't see a partner who feels any transgression has occurred. And holy shit, I look at this now and I'm like, well, yeah, okay, so if your communication game is way the fuck off, it's really, really obvious how this situation goes down. But nowhere in this journal entry do I go like, oh yeah, well, let's walk away.
I should just leave her. I should just leave her.
Man, it's not okay. If you want to have conversations about compromise, like, the whole point there is that you got to meet halfway.
Absolutely. And I think the word meeting is probably the best term for all this. I certainly have found myself in relationships where there are stages where one partner or both, like, you're just not willing to meet in the middle and fully see each other and listen to the other person's side with any sense of neutrality. Like, I think that that's what I've encountered. And that's definitely something that is going to be unmistakable for me in the future. It's just like, wow, this person, like, doesn't give enough of a shit to meet me in the middle and just see if we can move through this.
Right.
That's a big deal. And I'm realizing more and more that it's one of the larger parts of a successful relationship is just to be able to sit there and listen to what someone else is saying and be like, okay, well, I'm hearing you. I really hate what you just said because it makes me sound like an asshole. But I can see how you'd feel that way. And if I can in any way agree with you that maybe I might have been doing some of these things, then how can we move forward and fix this?
So as you oscillate back and forth between being in a relationship, finding its dysfunction, learning how to characterize it and identify it, move on from it, maybe now you're in this single state trying to assess, like, well, what are the things that I need for the next time this comes around? And there's a counterbalance too, right? We talk about the work ethic and the dangers of not being willing to walk away. And there's also this other end of the spectrum of being like, well, yeah, but I also don't want to be a perfectionist, right? I don't want to go spend all this time just trying to find or mold or whatever, like, end up in the perfect relationship when in fact
that shit doesn't exist. Let's be real.
Yeah. And you got to actually put the work in, and that's the whole point.
Right.
I don't want to stand up for things that aren't acceptable. And simultaneously, I don't want to get stuck in a position where, say, I'm just constantly looking for some improvement or some reason that I have to shut this out because it's not acceptable.
I completely agree with that. In the time, at least, that I've spent being single, I've just been sort of going over some highlights or of what are the most important things to me. What are the biggest ways in which I won't compromise? What are the biggest ways in which I will stand by myself instead of desert my morals and my boundaries just so I can stay with someone? And it's not an overwhelmingly long list. I want communication. I want transparency. I want somebody who I share interests with that I can have a friendship with. Mm. Those are kind of like the newer highlights that are more important. Before, like, I think that my values were all over the place, and it's probably because I hadn't been through enough hardship yet.
Do you think that sort of suffering or those trials are a necessary input to finding success? Or maybe asked more edgily, do you think it's possible for these young couples who haven't gone through some of this shit to actually survive and thrive?
I do. I think it's possible. For me personally, I am the kind of person who needs to experience it firsthand. You can hear all day about the suffer fest that other people have been through and what they've learned from it. And it's valuable and it's moving and emotional and great to hear and great to converse with someone about. But until you've actually been through it, it just doesn't stick all the way. But I don't think that everyone's like that. I'm meeting more and more of these like super wholehearted kids who come from situations where maybe they had a couple of role models in their lives that worked through some really shitty things, and they saw that and like, maybe it's a little bit more to do with your environment in those sorts of situations.
Sure. And finding that balance between how much analysis you can do versus sort of trying to live in the moment is...
Right.
It's an act that's probably... It does cater from personality to personality. So it's impossible to say, well, like, here's the rules. And, you know, if you get past level 7, then you have to go this way or that way, that sort of thing. It's not as structured.
We all know that overanalyzing your relationship is like number one killer, best way to squelch it, right? So... I'm not trying to do that, even though I know that I have some boundaries and I'm way more aware of some triggers at this point.
Alexandra Kleeman of the Washington Post wrote an amazing article about how prudence can sometimes get taken too far. Mm-hmm. And the quote that I wrote down was, all of which is to say that sometimes the best things in life drive right past you while you are still weighing the pros and cons of hitchhiking.
Right.
And it hit me so damn hard because I'm like such a chronic thinker and I just want to analyze and chew stuff apart and build frameworks and all this other shit. But like, wait a minute, that's not life. That's just thinking, right? That's just storytelling, and it might not actually contribute to, you know, the truths of whatever you're having in a moment where you get stood up for the holiday season. You're like, God damn, this hurts. I need to really reevaluate my setting or my situation.
Well, I think maybe that was the only truth that you needed to acknowledge, is like, this hurts. This doesn't feel good. This doesn't make me feel like I'm being fully met. I feel like this is going to happen over and over again. I feel like this is kind of a taking situation that's like sucking the life out of me, you know?
Totally.
And sometimes like that's the only truth that you need. I definitely have learned over and over again, especially trying to start new relationships, kind of in the aftermath of more serious separations and breakups. The more you project your previous problems onto something new, the worse it's going to be.
Right. This is where that sort of seeking perfectionism, I think, comes into play, right?
Yeah.
You've learned some good lessons, but maybe it's a little, am I allowed to introduce that on the first date? Well, probably not. But
no.
Somewhere along the way, there's going to be this transition. Like, you hit a point of inflection wherein there's requirements for the level of communication that you're expecting or how much you're going to talk about the things that are very important to you, this sort of thing.
Well, and it's up to you to communicate those, you know, however you see fit. I think like maybe just in light of letting things develop more naturally, those conversations usually happen like once you decide you actually want to see each other exclusively, seemingly.
Sure.
It's just interesting to figure out. There's a pattern and a flow to like this newfangled thing called dating, and I just haven't figured it all out yet.
These crazy kids
with
their
dating. I'm okay with it.
I think the general consensus of wisdom that I'm finding is I don't want to build the rule book on what causes me pain.
Right.
Or what takes joy away. I want to focus on what works rather than what does not work. And if I can do that in a way that allows those sort of enforcements or rule checks or whatever you want to call them to show up at the right time, it's because you want to use the carrot more than the stick in terms of endorsing situations that work really well for you.
I agree with that. Positive reinforcement to the extreme. I think that when you are talking about what actually makes you feel good and what actually makes you feel secure and helps you move forward in a relationship. You're inviting someone versus deterring them from like doing all these bad things that have hurt you in the past. It's a way better way to decide and figure out whether or not you agree on how you're going to make it last and how you're going to make it stay versus, well, someone has hurt me in the past. And if I catch you lying, like, I just can't fucking have that. You know, like, no one likes being told that. It's like, so you're automatically assuming I'm going to hurt you, number one, and you still have trust issues.
Yeah,
ooh,
exactly.
That's frightening.
Like, I don't want to let cynicism win when it comes to learning some of these lessons the hard way.
Agreed.
Because really only the lessons, only the most important lessons in my life have been learned the hard way.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten any easy wins.
Yeah,
I've had
yeah.
to fight tooth and nail for all of this, we'll call it insight or wisdom or whatever. And goddamn, if it's not going to be a situation where I'm panicked and responsive rather than just like thoughtful and proactive, I need to be aware of the fact that all of those lessons were hard won.
Right.
Act two, side effects. You know, what's really interesting about all of this is that we can spend all day spinning our wheels, talking about wisdom and experience and the clever stuff that happens that we draw from in prior parts of our lives. But, you know, I made that sort of swipe about the young couples who just get together and find a way to make it work. There are maybe some symptoms that you can see in your own life. It's like having a cold, right? Like, I don't need to be an expert in having the sniffles to know when my nose is stuffed up, right? There is a sort of intuitive situation for some of these. Have you in your life ever found things that just are really obvious telltales of the sign of the times that didn't have maybe any function of your experience with them in the past?
Absolutely. The body always knows best when you're kind of in a chronic, irreparable situation and you need to figure out ways to sever ties.
How did that show up for you? For me, it was always just like, I wake up crying and I'm like, okay, it's time to reevaluate. Maybe I waited too long. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I have TMJ, which is kind of a blessing and a curse. So definitely hearing a lot of snap, crackle, pop when I'm really avoiding dealing with something and asserting myself and moving on.
This is like when humans talk about yawning. Right when you said TMJ, I started stretching my jaw out.
Yeah, it's serious. Anyone who's a clencher out there, I feel for you because, I mean, you'll wake up in the morning and just, you won't have been grinding your teeth, but you'll have been clenching so hard that like every time you open your mouth to eat something for the first 2 hours, you're just like, I don't know if I can do this for the rest of the day. I'm dying. TMJ, what else will happen? I will suddenly like lose all my motivation to work out. So I'm not one of those people that gains the happy weight kind of thing. That doesn't happen to me when I'm happy.
So when you stop working out, do you just stop eating as well?
Because I'm already on a roll of ignoring myself, I just kind of, I just kind of really go for it. And
just full send on the unhealthy lifestyle.
Yeah, for real. I will bury that stuff deep. And that like, that definitely takes me a long time to get to that level because I'm generally pretty health conscious and need it for my sanity. But if I'm going down the rabbit hole, then I'm going pretty hard.
One of my best friends from college is an avid gamer, a video gamer, and his metabolism is like, I feel like you could probably write a medical journal article about this kid because he just stops eating. Like everything just slows down because he's like, well, I sat all day today. So all I had was like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Like, I know who this
is. Multivitamin. Yeah. Well, I mean, something to be said about just going all the way to the deep end of the pool. I don't really suspect that he's doing it. I feel like the guy gets real true joy out of that lifestyle.
Right.
But it is such a marvel to look at from the outside because if I sit down for more than a day, I'm like scratching my eyes out. I can't live like that.
I just and feel guilty.
Yeah.
AF.
And the antsy. I jump all over the place and I'm like constantly texting everybody trying to get something put together. I'm like, hey, you want to come to the studio? We'll talk about dirt. And I'm like, wait a minute. Don't you do a podcast about feelings? What the fuck, man?
Like, dirt. I'm one of those dogs that, I mean.
I think you just gave away the punchline.
I'm like one of those dogs that gets the zoomies.
Oh, yeah.
I just
doing loops around the house, run up and down the stairs 15 times. I'm like, well, I'm just going to, you know, move my clothes from the dryer to my bedroom, one article of clothing, one sock at
a time.
Because
I've lost my mind. Yeah, anxiety is a real thing for sure for me. I can't do that. But as soon as I am out of whatever situation was literally weighing me down, I'll drop like 15 pounds.
So it's like you get revenge body, but it's not against an ex, but instead against your own anxiety.
It's just like my body being like, okay, we're doing this again. You're not ignoring me anymore. Thank you for paying attention and for showing up today. No, it's not revenge body. It's just a blooming that's happening because I've been like a dying flower for however long.
A seasonal thing, right?
Yeah.
So you go back and you're just a tree with no leaves, and then spring springs. And this is a tired metaphor. Let's move on.
For real.
What do we do in this situation? So we've identified the symptoms or the telltales. Maybe we've had our little power talk or confidence boosting moment where I'm finally like, okay, I'm doing this. What's the next step? Where do you drive all that energy?
As with addiction, the first step is always admitting that you have a problem. Second step, telling people.
Ah, reach out for help.
It's telling people. It holds you accountable in some way.
Oh, interesting.
When I like air out my shit and say, okay, guys, friends, family, I need you. I've finally realized that I need to walk away from this shitty situation that you've been telling me to walk away from for however long. Now hold me accountable because I'm actually doing it.
Yeah. Have you ever relapsed with like an ex or anything like that?
Oh, yeah.
My God. There's exits on Highway 6 that when I'm driving to and from the mountains, I look at the exit and I'm like, oh, God, I have these flashbacks of driving to my ex's house and being like, oh, yeah, we'll just sit around and have tea and it'll be really wholesome. And oh, I swear I'm not fucking totally going back on all these years of misery. Oh, God.
Swear I don't miss you. And then I think three is definitely initiating some separation, whether it be like actually approaching your boss and quitting your job, or actually approaching your partner and telling them the reasons why you got to go, and definitely initiating the severing of the ties. What's number four?
Come up with maybe a pillow. I don't know. I feel like I need a strategy for dealing with the relapse thing that I'm joking about, because there's something so real about leaving a situation that is still ambivalent. It's really easy when the decision is obvious, and it's not so easy when you have lots of things that work and simultaneously lots of things that don't work. And I'm in the process of, I think this framework might even extend beyond romance when it comes to that kind of stuff, because I'll go and take a job interview in another city. Not because I don't love Denver, but because there's this thing that happens where you also need to counterbalance or miss it, right? Like go away for the purpose of creating that longing.
So maybe you need to create a list of reasons why you can't go back and why you've got to go forward.
Or formulate scarcity such that you can really balance the stuff that does work that versus the stuff that doesn't.
Right.
And maybe that kind of sounds like having second guesses about deciding to move on, that sort of thing. But sometimes it's enough just to create distance, right? You don't need to sever a situation in order to vanquish it entirely. But don't confuse that. There is going to be a time when you have to sort of shit or get off the pot.
Right.
And this is a thing that I'm really bad at because I flip-flop more than anybody else that I know.
Okay. So initiate the severing. Allow for distance to do its magic. Step five, closure.
I don't even know what that looks like. Learning about forgiveness is such a tricky business because it's more about creating peace than necessarily seeking reprieve or reconciliation with the thing that you're finding closure around.
Right. Forgiveness is about acceptance, and it's something that you're doing for you. Most of the time, we seldom ever get the apology that we think we deserve. Acceptance is a big part of closure, forgiveness. So maybe step six, the healing.
Yes.
I'm going to a healing retreat on Friday.
Fuck yeah, that sounds
excited.
Great.
Excited. Yeah, the healing. And then step seven, branch out.
Yeah, perhaps. Move on. Find the new pastures to graze from and let your little gazelle legs stretch out and run free.
Yeah.
This is already a tired metaphor, but I'm enjoying it.
Frolic.
Yes.
Paint with all the colors Prance. Of the wind.
It's such a beautiful thing. You ever see like a dog hopping through a wheat field or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
It's magical.
Porpoising.
Majestic. Yes.
I think that's all I got.
Yeah. I think we're running out of steam here. But I would say, in summary, the most important thing is to focus on what works rather than what does not. And hopefully we can start to build this rule book. And I think it's going to take time. I don't think we can pull this off in a single episode. But I'm a believer. I know that we all could use a hand in improving how we manage this rule book, because everything is going to end one way or the other, right? Impermanence is this thing that is non-negotiable.
Incredibly true. It's the essence of life.
So maybe we'll instead call this the rule book or the handbook for dealing with impermanence rather than how to walk away. But one way or the other, we will find a way through it. And hopefully anybody listening to this can come and be a part of the conversation, because there's just so much to say.
Give me a loop. Give me a loop.
In the meantime, take care of yourself. Be kind. Continue to prosper in 2019. We'll be back here next week. I hope. And thank you for listening.
I'm Anna.
I am Charlie.
We invite you to love the process.
This is Shit I'm Not Proud Of. Signing off once again. Happy week. Shit I'm Not Proud Of is made with love in Denver, Colorado, and is recorded at Creative Density Coworking. If you need a low-cost podcasting studio to record from in Denver, look up Creative Density at www.creativedensity.com. Next week, we once again have no idea what we're going to do, but we're trying our best and we'll figure something out. Until that time, we sincerely hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening.